Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in some amount of time that includes but is not limited to 30 minutes. I'm Davey, and with me tonight I got Phil and Aaron. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. As always, we kick it off with context here. We are recording a few weeks after the release of Molag and Godsworn. As always, thanks for the folks who've replied on the threads when we post. Very much appreciate that. You can always get in touch with us at WTHcast on Twitter or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Or just drop a line in any of the Facebook messages that we pop up. Today, we have, for us, a surprisingly timely topic. We're going to talk about the big dank troll in the room, the brute, the monster, pushing everybody around, making everybody fussy on the forums and Reddit and whatever about how OP they are. We're talking, of course, about Molly G, Molag's mob. We're gonna cover with him. We've played some games with and against. Gonna focus on that, and we'll get you a brief review of the individual fighters, warband specific cards and highlights. Talk about some of the cards that you might think about including, and then cover some overall strategies and matchups, including what you might want to do on the other side of that. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been up to. Phil, what has been on your Warhammer Underworlds platter over the past couple weeks?
So I've been prepping for Akon, trying to narrow down choices for which warbands I want to run. Sort of trying to decide between the orcs and Magors at this point. And I don't know, they're very similar, but Magors feel maybe like they're better, so kind of leaning that direction.
Right, you were saying kind of every time that you did something with orcs, you're like, yeah, Magors probably could have done the same thing, only just a bit better, or even a lot
better. Yeah, so, yeah, pretty much. I mean, it just sort of feels like the fighters are all just a smidge better, and so, I don't know. The orcs are just fun, though, so it's sort of torn in directions of, like, do I want to go super competitive, or do I want to go just fun?
That's cool. Yeah, and you can totally, you know, punch the air and in victory every time Hacker or Basha does something. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
Aaron, what about you? What have you been doing with Warhammer?
Not a lot of gaming on my front. However, I outside of Underworlds, I am sort of excited about the sort of revamp or re-release of the Khorne, and it just so happens that I've been sort of putting together a lot of Reavers lately, so I just sort of ran with that momentum a little bit and started putting together Garrick's Reavers, and then I think I'll continue on to Magors as well. Don't know if I have any intention of playing them anytime soon, but just to get them put together and you know, in the old box in case I do want to fire them up. So sure. That's how my time has been spent on that front.
A lot of red plastic in your
past, so. Well, especially because the starter set that I'm putting together is also that red plastic, so a little monotonous, and it feels like a little different too. So I don't know, or maybe my knife is getting dull. It's tough to say.
Yeah, I find that way cooler than it probably deserves. But the colored plastic's is a pretty rad thing that G-Dub's been doing. For myself,
just gonna spray him black anyway.
Yeah, you'd be like Eric and not undercoat him at all. Just paint
super risky.
I know.
We could only dream to live up to being like Eric, I think.
Yeah,
just yes, that's how you say it.
Jettison your patience and do everything right away to a higher level than I can do.
Well, yeah.
For me, I had had a good time. My brother was visiting. That meant I had a Underworlds player in my very own house. So for about a week there, I was able to play a couple games just about every day.
Davey, I don't mean to scare you, but there's an Underworlds player in your house right now.
Call is coming from inside the house. Got up, played some with Phil, played at a couple different stores. Got to play against some spooky ghosts and some orcs. So getting some reps. A lot of playing with and against Molags, sort of in preparation for this, just to try them out because new and cool. So be drawing a lot on that experience that we've seen there. And also been doing a whole lot of reading. The blogs have been in overdrive. They're putting out some really stellar content. I'm talking about Cataphrine Relic and Call It Shadespire, Can You Roll Crit, Steel City Underworlds. I think all their content's been really top-notch. Really been enjoying that lately. So keep it up, fellas. Thanks.
Definitely.
But let's get into it. Let's get into the regenerating meat of this podcast here. We're going to start it off with covering the individual fighters. So, Molog. You can spend a lot of time on this fella because he is going to be doing most of the heavy lifting. Phil, can you give us a quick rundown on this guy?
Sure. So I think the standout things to pay attention to, he's 3 move, 1 shield for defense, 7 wounds, so really hard to bring down. And then he's got 2 different attacks. One is a reach 2 hammer, 3 damage with knockback 1, which is really annoying. And then Whirling Club, which is much more situational, 1 range, 2 swords for 2 damage, but it targets all adjacent enemy fighters. Right. In terms of how he inspires, he needs to have 3 or more wound tokens on his card. And then, of course, the real, I don't know what you'd call it, the real spice to this guy. He can move or charge, even if he has a single move token when he's not inspired. And then after he gets inspired, he can then charge, even if he has a charge token. Which, I mean, that level of movement control is just bonkers. And definitely is what I think throws people a lot with this guy.
I mean, I think it's basically what opens this up. If you have a warband where one guy's going to do all the lifting, he needs to not be shut down as soon as he makes a move or a charge.
Right.
And it is pretty juicy. So I think a big thing for him also on the Inspire is getting that extra dice for his Whirling Club, right, Bops?
Oh, sure, sure. Swords. Yep.
That gives him, especially when he's fighting the smaller warbands, you know, if you don't need that huge, massive attack and there's a good chance he's got upgrades on him as well, then you can go for the more accurate 3 sword swing. If that's what you're going for.
So, you know, Davey, I can see why you would say that, and it's sort of a common misconception, but when you actually crunch the numbers, 3 sword attacks are actually auto misses. you're never going to hit that sword. I don't care. How many times you throw those 3 dice at it. So that's a little fool's errand when it comes to Molog.
I do appreciate the correction, and I am suitably chastised and humbled. Thank you, Aaron, for your contribution.
Oh, sure, sure. So, well, I am pretty good at this game.
that's what everybody says.
That Aaron guy, so good at this game.
I mean, it's more like I just say it a lot, so it sounds like a lot of people are saying it.
Soaks in. All right, Bat Squig. This fella, he starts at 4 move, 2 dodge, which is kind of nice. Only 2 health, 2 swords, and 1 damage. He can fly over people. He can fly over lethal hexes. He can't end his move in an occupied hex, which I'm glad they made that clarification. That would be weird if somebody was like, oh, sure, we're just going to be... Anyway, I mean, I guess you got to put it in there. Can't hold objectives and can't have attack action upgrades, so he's not going to be flying around carrying a hero slayer or whatever. This fella inspires along with Molog. It's not if Molog is inspired, it's if Molog has 3 or more wound tokens. He gets an extra point of damage, an extra point of defense, so up to 3 dodge, very nice, and an extra point of move. He's kind of the 3 Griblies that follow Molog around, he's perhaps the most interesting or the most capable of... Yeah, I'll take that back. He's most capable of contributing actively. How about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say most interesting.
Yeah. What would you say the most interesting? You got 2 more choices. Why don't you pick either one? Give me your most interesting.
I'm just going to pick the next card. Maybe I'd say he's the most interesting. And this is the Spite Shroom. And so he is a little... mushroom looking dude. I don't know. He's got spores coming out the top of him, but he can move two. He's got one dodge just right out the gate and has two wounds, which is a little lower than we'd like to see. He's got a choking cloud attack, which is just a range one, two swords, and that does one damage. But it does target all the adjacent fighters around him, but you do have to roll for each one of them. Like the bat squig, he inspires along with the big guy. So if there's three or more wounds on him. He also can't have attack action upgrades or hold objectives, which is pretty standard for the rest of the dudes in this warband. But he's got this little reaction that when he's taken out of combat, or like, you know, enough damage is done to him to take him out of combat, he can do one damage to adjacent enemies. So basically he just sort of explodes in like spores and damages everyone around him. Yeah. Which is pretty neat. I say that's pretty interesting. Yeah, no, I think I'm more confident in my most interesting squig comment. When he upgrades, he gets another dodge and another pip of damage on his choking cloud.
But remains painfully slow at two hexes.
Yeah. I think all the speed was dumped into Molag.
Yeah. Well, it's,
well, and
it's,
the bat squig, I suppose.
It's hard to walk when you're an animate mushroom. You have like two spider, not even eight spider legs, like two spider legs sticking out.
How would
your
you
head.
Know?
I mean, I think I can make some logical conclusions here.
Oh man, there's no room for logic in this war band.
Not with spite room. Stalag squeak, Phil, hit us.
So I actually think, just in a pure mechanics point of view, this guy is probably the most interesting one.
Agree. That's why I had to walk back my statement.
Why you gotta step to me like that? I don't know. I think. Walking mushroom's pretty cool.
I would agree that, like, from a design perspective, the mushroom is pretty cool. But I think from a mechanics perspective, the Stalag Squig has the most potential. And that is because he is not placed like a normal fighter. He is placed after all fighters have been deployed and is then placed in any hex that's empty. There are so many things that you can do with that. And I think that sort of lends him to being a clutch piece, depending on how you build the deck. You can use him to set up supports. You can use him to block out objective hexes. You can use him to block charging lanes. You could, you know, any number of things. Stats-wise, though, he's pretty much garbage. He is one range, one hammer, one damage. Can't move. I mean, that shouldn't be a surprise. He's a Stalag type. And his inspiration.
Stalag might, actually, I think.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, awkward.
Oh, jeez.
Aaron Pedant Bowler up in this thing.
That's the way I was raised.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he has the same inspire mechanic. Same as everyone else. Three damage or more on Molag. And then when he inspires, he just gets one extra dice and one extra damage, which would normally be fine. But since this guy can't move, like, I don't know, you're not really attacking with him. Maybe every so often you'll have just somebody just happen to stand next to him and you can go ahead and chomp someone. But
it's a weird game where Stalag Squig makes an attack, I think, in general. But I you're right. I think his most interesting thing is his positioning at the start. I think that's probably, like, you know, maybe 90% of his warband is how you use Molag, and then 5% is the other two, and then 5% is just this guy. Like, where are you putting him, and how are you matching him to, you know, are you denying? I've seen him used to, or when I say seen, it's either me or someone I've been playing, you know, we've been using him to make it harder to score supremacy by blocking off an objective, or defending against Faneway Crystal by dropping him on an objective in your own territory, or putting him close to Molag so that if somebody tries to get at you, then if they try to pick him off, then you are coming back with some supports. And two shields is not a guaranteed kill for anybody. So
very true.
It's he's definitely killable, but he's just in that range of like, ah, man, that's a little bit hard. You know, do I really want to waste an activation on this guy? So, yeah, that's my stealth most interesting fighter in this warband, or at least of the three Gribs. listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. What are we? Are we good? All right. Let's go back to the spice room.
Let's talk about inspiration mechanic instead. How important, impactful, like how important is to get this warband inspired or Molag inspired, in your opinion, based on the games you've seen, which I don't know what else you'd be forming an opinion from, but go, Phil.
I think it is very helpful to be able to do the double charge. But I don't think it's actually essential at all for him to be super dangerous. Just moving him into position first is enough to mess with people's game plan, knowing that you can still charge after you've moved. And three damage is nothing to sneeze at. So, unless you're going like the super, super aggro route, I don't even know that you have to have him get inspired. Like, it's nice when it happens, but, I think he's just perfectly effective the way he is. Base. And I think that's maybe one of the things that frustrates people about fighting him too, is that like he's super effective all the time. There's never a situation where you're like, oh man, like, you know, Bash or Hakka, where it's like, oh, I need to get this guy inspired, otherwise he's pretty much garbage.
Right. Yeah, so you can get some good I think certain matchups want him inspired harder than others. If he's fighting Stormcast or Orcs or Magors, then getting your four damage on your base swing is a bigger deal. But I'd agree. I think he can do plenty of work without being inspired. I think he improves enough by being inspired that it's worth taking inspiration strikes. I don't know if it's worth taking voluntary damage on him unless you know that you're fighting like Aaron, who's gonna run into the corners. Try to never.
Unless I'm lulling into a false sense of security.
Yeah, exactly.
No, just
yeah.
Kidding. I'm not going to attack you. I'm going to tell you right now.
I definitely agree with the inspiration strikes. I think that's where it's at. If you can get him inspired without taking any damage, that's the real scary state to be in.
Sure. All right. So that's the overview of the fighters. We're going to talk. We touched on it a little bit. We'll talk about general strategies and strengths and weaknesses of Warband a little bit later. But we're going to hit up some of the cards in each of the categories. And we'll touch on the ones that are specific to the Warband, what we think of them. Not all of them, but the ones that we find particularly noteworthy. And then maybe throw out some that we think are definitely worth thinking about if you're building a Warband with these guys. So. Let's talk objectives. Phil, were there any objectives that jumped out at you as like, hey, this is like, and I'm talking about the Molag Warband specific objectives. They thought like, oh man, this is, you're definitely going to include this in here, or it's tempting, but not, or anything like that.
So I think in terms of like easy scores, Demolished feels like a really strong one. It's score immediately, just have an attack succeed that's five or more damage, so one upgrade and an inspired Molag can just score that from any attack. Seems like a pretty easy score immediately to me, so I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I'd agree that one, that feels like one you probably don't want to draw in your first round because it might take a little work
for first
round to get up to that, but second or third, a score immediately with, you know, with a attack that's happening anywhere, you know, that's pretty solid.
Admittedly, there are not many of these that I would want to draw in my first hand.
Sure.
A lot of them are either requiring lots of kills, like
Rampage Carnage, and Carnage. Yeah, those
are Rampage.
Kill three or kill four, like by definition, some of those are unscorable against some warbands, you know, wild, right?
Right. And like easy pickings isn't necessarily something that's easy pickings.
So easy pickings is what, kill two with one attack action?
Two with one attack. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Which, I mean, that spinning club is not guaranteed to even hit two people, let alone kill two people. So,
sure.
I mean, if you got some dangle bros hanging around, yeah, maybe. But again, it's not something I'd want to see right away at the beginning of the game. If you were playing defensive, though, is it a sleep might be one that you'd want to draw right away, just because may not hurt you as much.
Sure. And then in playing, we figured that there's a couple objectives. You decide, are you taking some insurance objectives? Like, is it asleep so Molag takes no actions takes no activations in the round? And then stuff like earn your keep, where any of the other things kill something, score immediately for one. Those are sort of, hey, like Molag got iced out or killed or something like that, I can still score these. Or are you all in on Molag is going to live through it all and he's going to do all the work? So I think that's where, when you're building your deck, you're making the decision between some of these as far as whether they're worth your time, right?
Definitely.
Aaron, any of the faction-specific objectives jump out at you?
Well, just to build off of that real quick, like, maybe it's just me, but like, I'm only going to play this warband if I'm all in on Molag. I don't even want to entertain the idea that he's not going to be making it to the end of the game.
Yeah.
So like, for like, when I see Earn Your Keeper, you know, some of the other ones like that, I can't even see myself considering those, because it's going to be all Molag all the time in whatever deck I make. But in terms of other faction-specific objectives, I think the got them. I keep wanting to call it Got Them, which I think is a much better name for the card. the score them immediately at the beginning of your activation if there's going to be three or more enemy fighters adjacent to Molag. In my mind, I reckon I would be running a few distraction or distraction-esque cards. In fact, I think there's a faction one that is distraction, just to get people where I want them. So I think. To my mind, that would be pretty easy to maybe coordinate getting them surrounding Molag. Granted, it's a little dangerous. You're really putting yourself out there, but I think that's the name of the game for the deck I would be running.
Yeah, I mean, so this one pairs beautifully with Center of Attention, where you drag a bunch of people towards a single fighter, and it being scored immediately. The problem with this one, right, is that it has to be at the beginning of your activation. So that means you have to manipulate the board on the enemy's turn. So I had that in there for quite a few games, and even against Zarbag's Gits, where there's just fighters all over the place, and it was really hard to engineer getting them to all come in at the beginning of your turn. So I was back and forth on that, but like a two glory score immediately positioning objective, that's pretty tasty. But you definitely have to be taking, like you said, distraction, predatory growls, Center of Attention, something like that could pull people in. But I like it because it's a score without rolling dice, but I don't think we ever scored it in eight games, going back and forth. So hard to say. I think if you build towards it, maybe. How about things that are not specific to this warband? Any objectives that really jump out at you, Phil?
It's kind of funny, but from our games, it felt like Long Strider was actually a really solid one, because it's just so easy to get.
Right.
Because Molag can just move twice.
Just casually get it, right? Score immediately for making when you make your second move action in the round. No one scores it easier than Molag, right?
Yeah. You never really were expecting it, but there's also nothing you can do about it. So it's a nice insurance card where it's like, well, at least I know I can get this because it doesn't require dice and nobody can really stop me from doing it.
Yep.
Well, that's not completely true. I understand there are cards to add movement tokens that would stop him, but for the most part, it's a pretty safe score. Sure.
I think that actually pairs really nicely with Keep Them Guessing and Change of Tactics.
That's right where I was gonna go.
Yeah. So right, like the deck we built had Keep Them Guessing, Long Strider, Change of Tactics, and then the ones that Heroic Effort in the Leaders Pack one, where one fighter or one leader takes all four activations, and you can do that with Molag. You know, put them on guard, move them, charge them, and all of a sudden you've scored. You know, Keep Them Guessing for two, Change of Tactics for one, immediately Long Strider for another one, and made all your, you know, you made five glory out of the round without ever rolling a single dice. Aaron, what do you like?
you had my attention. Now you have my interest, or I don't know how the quote goes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's Aaron's love language.
Yeah, it's true. Tell my wife.
the mating call for an errand bowler.
That's a Valentine's Day themed episode.
Anyone want to hit anything else here?
Well, we were talking about just like the leader pack. Given that, to my mind, I'm all in on Molag. I wanted to revisit the leader expansion to see if there's anything that I would have initially glossed over that would make more sense on this warband. So, I mean, there's a couple in there. I don't know that they're better than some of the other just generic or more widely used objectives. But, I could see maybe using Fearless Leader, which is the score in an end phase if your leader is the only friendly fighter adjacent to any enemy fighters.
Sure.
Because, again, I'm going to keep my squid in my play style. I'll keep my squigs out of there, in the back, and if they do get attacked, they're probably going down, honestly. I guess maybe not the stalag squig, but the other two drop pretty quickly, so I could see Molag being the only one near anybody, or Slayer, it's a score immediately, which are nice, obviously, if your leader takes two or more enemy fighters out. So I know right. We talked about four or three being a little tricky, but two seems a little bit more realistic,
that
right?
Seems doable, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially so, inspired, double charge.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that I think it would be at the level where I'd be comfortable with trying to get to and around, basically.
Another one that I thought pairs really well is Victorious Duel.
Yeah.
So normally it's sort of there's this sort of cat and mouse game of two leaders going after each other, but when Molag's your leader and he's the only one killing guys, he just happens to pick this up by killing a leader. So,
He's got the mobility and the reach to do it, right? If they hid their dude in the back corner, if anyone can get there, it's Molag. So yeah, totally. I think this is an extremely strong card for him. And the other one I was going to mention is Extreme Flank, because it's so easy to set up with your squigs. You can, right, as long as you have one starting hex on an edge, then that Stalag Squig can go to the opposite edge and get it for you right there. The only thing that makes me hesitate on that is it sometimes feels like a trap, because it's a little bit telegraphed and disruptible, and it also means that your squigs are scattered far from they're not all squigs, but your guys are all scattered far from Molag, which makes them potentially vulnerable to getting picked up as easy glory, rather than being close where close to the troll where people don't want to go. But I mean, it's an easy score. Two glory, passive, restricted for a reason. all right, ploys. Let's run down any... I'll start this off. So this is not... We're talking the faction-specific ploys here. One that is not one that I think you'd include, it's one that I want to talk about just because it bothers me, is Hobble. This is one that... So you can place a movement token on somebody, but they have to be adjacent to Stalag Squig, and it's only on a 50-50. So it's especially painful in a wave of releases that came out with Transfixing Gaze. Is that it? Transfixing Stare, Transfixing Gaze?
I think it's Transfixing Stare.
Right. So that works on any fighter, and it works at a range of two. So this particular card is warband specific, fighter specific, works randomly, has a shorter range. It feels totally backwards. It would be intriguing if I know mechanically speaking, Hobble probably wouldn't work from a range of two, but it bothers me when the warband specific cards are so much weaker than a universal. If they're not on par, if they're that much weaker, then there's just, you're just not going to see them. So I thought that was a weird whiff, and you see that occasionally in other warbands. But
And I think it's starting to, and the theme that you're talking about of the specifics being worse than the general, it happens over and over again to the point where I don't think it's accidental anymore. I think they're doing it on purpose, and I can't think of what the reason could possibly be for it. But
yeah, I mean, I get it if it's a hair worse. Let's say this Hobble card was Molag specific within one and was not random, and you could use it on any fighter in the warband for whatever reason. Then you're maybe I double up on this mechanic with that and transfixing stare. But when it's got this many down, I don't know. That's just bothersome when it pops up. I'll try not to gripe about it every time I see it.
I think the 50-50 is really what kills it for me. with the sort of weird deployment, you could maybe make a case for it's like, okay, you put him next to somebody at the beginning of the game so that it holds him up for a turn. Maybe that's okay, but you're not even guaranteed to get that.
Yeah.
So
right. So take comfort in the fact that, like, you don't have to worry about the opponent playing around it. Like, they're not going to give your Salad Swig a wide berth because no one in their right mind would expect another person to be playing it. And so, that's boom, surprise, yeah. You've been hobbled.
Yeah, and I do have a tendency, like, as soon as I've got a deck that I think is good, I need to at least put a couple jank cards in there to make me think that I'm cool and innovative and unique. So, yeah, you're talking my language now. Hobble.
I think you're all in Hobble cool and 2019. Innovative and unique.
And even without me playing Hobble? Or is it contingent on that?
heavy on the unique.
All right. What else we got? Somebody give me something positive here. What? Give me a ploy that you find tasty.
Predatory Growls, another distraction, which I'm all about. And I think it's especially useful here if you're going to disrupt either your opponent's game plan or at the very least draw someone in to get them into range of Molag. I think it's important. So I think that's a... to my deck, it would be an auto include, I believe.
Aaron would include a ploy that doesn't use dice and is about positioning.
Mm-hmm.
News at 9. Phil, Phil, anything jumping out at you?
I personally think that Flit is the strongest ploy of the Molag ploys.
Ooh, tell me more.
A push for 3 hexes, but it's only for the Bat Squig. And it, like normal for the Bat Squig, you can use it to push through occupied hexes. While you're probably not like moving the Bat Squig to go, you know, punch somebody and do some crazy positioning that way, it is a great way in like activation 4 to suddenly go and be like, okay, now I'm on an edge hex and I'm going to grab extreme flank.
Sure.
And I didn't look like I was trying to position for it. So, yeah.
Or consider it for Molag's next attack. He's going to have single supports, you know, like
also an option.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I like it. For me, I was looking, it depends on, so you got, not brutal. Well, Brutal Savagery increases your, dice. And if there's one thing that Molag could use, a little bit more accuracy, especially definitely. Get the engine rolling. So that was interesting. And then Wind Up, which is +1 damage. But it, unlike Trap or Pit Trap, you're telegraphing a little bit. But everybody knows Molag's going to attack anyway. So and that, I think that's crucial, especially if you're including, is it Demolished that we were talking about earlier, where you know that increases your chance of scoring that earlier, sooner rather than later, not relying on getting a particular upgrade out. So... those are the specifics. Anyone else got anything to hit there? Should we jump on to the generics that might work well with this warband?
So just a slight tangent, but so to compare something like Brutal Savagery to Haymaker or Light Armor, for instance.
Yep.
I know they're not both ploys. But so
Brutal Savagery adding 1 dice, Haymaker adding 2 dice, but with a downside of you are no longer able to roll defense dice for the rest of the round.
So I've been thinking about this. When you've got the case where you can take Brutal Savagery and the generic version, which is Determined Effort,
yep.
Does that feel good enough that you would skip out on Haymaker because of its downsides and you need Molag to live?
Yeah, I mean, I think one classic way with Haymaker is to only burn it when you think you're going to take somebody out or do it right at the end of the round so that you don't get the downside. I can tell you, let's say Molag is swinging at a, I don't know, at an uninspired Stormcast, so 1 shield defense. Normally 2 hammers on 1 shield, it's a 54%. If you bump that up to 3 hammers, then he is 70%. So it's like a 16% increase just on that one card. So you improve your chances by 16%. Haymaker, on the other hand, jumps it all the way up to 80%. So that's another 10. So you're talking 16 versus 26% improvement in your chances of landing a blow. But then that Brutal Savagery, like you said, is it worth it? Well, Brutal Savagery you can freely use at the beginning of the round instead of feeling like you got to hang it towards the end. So I think it depends on just how aggressive you feel like you can be or want to be. In this Warband, that's pretty aggressive. I don't know. Is that?
Yeah, no. That was the point I was trying to make. So
sure. Well, yeah. I mean, in a Warband that's going to live or die by whether Molag is accurate, it's totally worth considering burning a ploy to increase accuracy even by nominal amounts. So, and this is more than that. Let's see other ones. I think anything you want on this guy, if you're going out of the, you know, from generics, is pushes are huge, right? Because
oh, definitely
that just extends his reach even more, and with that range 2 attack, it's a big deal. Commanding stride as a leader, he can take huge advantage of that, like 3 hexes onto another starting hex. That's crazy good. But any of the pushes, like Aaron was talking about, predatory growls or distraction, pull people towards you. You know, you want all the cool things. Listen to our first episode and turn that up to 11, because that's what he can do with it. Any other generic ploys?
Going back to the leader pack, commanding strike, not stride, but strike. Where we were talking about, you need a little bit more accuracy on a log, so you can reroll an attack dice during your leader's first attack action. Like oftentimes, your leader's the only guy who's gonna attack, so I feel like it wouldn't be a wasted card otherwise. And I don't know, I got premonition on the list. In the next activation, you can reroll one or more defense dice. Now I don't know if that statistically, like if you're only rolling one defense dice in the first place, is it still worth trying to re-roll that one if your leader's under attack? I don't know. To my mind, if you're gonna go all in on Molag, you want to do what you can to keep him alive. So that's just one example of a way to try to do so.
That's fair. You could discourage an attack by doing that. I know with the commanding strike, that is going to be secondary to bringing Fueled by Fury, which allows any fighter to reroll as many attack dice as they want. But if you're doubling down...
Well, do both, man.
Yeah, do both. Go all in on something. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one that we actually mentioned earlier, but is probably worth just calling out here. Center of Attention is really great for Molag. Just because you can set up the Whirling Club if you need to. And then I haven't seen it, and I don't know if it would actually work out, but Incredible Leap might be interesting for him. Because being able to move through blocked hexes and occupied hexes in your next move...
That's very interesting.
Could really... make people think like, oh, I'm totally safe, and then all of a sudden there's a troll jumping over the blocked hexes to come and smash him in the face.
I think it's an auto include just on that imagery. I think on that mental image alone, I think it's
you've convinced me.
Yeah. Very interesting. I like that. And I do think like some of the big defensive tech against Molag is to take boards that have blocked hexes, because it futzes with his range 2 attack for sure. I like that. One we found we were including is Second Wind, which interacts weirdly with some of his stuff, and I think it's going to probably end up with some FAQs just to sort it out. This is one that says, choose a friendly fighter that made a charge action this phase, and the next activation they being activated as if they had moved rather than charged. So the thing with Molag is that, let's say he's inspired, and he's permitted to charge again even after he's charged the one time, so he can make 2. He can't attack. So once he's charged, he's done. The only other thing he's going to be able to do from there on out is make another charge. So if you charge with your first one, Second Wind will allow you to take some swings. So I think that's... I found it to be pretty useful there, where somebody thinks that Molag's more done than he is. I'm not sure. I'm assuming if he makes 2 charges, this still works. But I don't know for sure.
I would think so.
Yeah.
It's just... if they've charged, it doesn't really say anything about like the number of tokens they have.
Sure. And the thing is, it doesn't even refer to tokens, because it's from before that. But you're totally right here. I think if they'd charged twice, you count it as if they'd moved twice, and then he can take a swing. And every extra swing you can milk out of Molag is pretty great. So
and then I think... with this card, a lot of conversation that I've seen online is, so if he's not inspired, if you charge, can you then use Second Wind to let him charge again? Because it says that if he only has a move token, he can still charge.
Right. That's where the FAQ is going to have to come in, right?
Yeah.
Because this card doesn't reference tokens, but...
Right.
Yeah. All right. Fair. I think even if you play it in its most conservative, where you're not counting tokens or whatever, I think it's still pretty handy for him. But.
Definitely.
Anybody else got some ploys they want to hit up on this before we move on to everybody's favorite card type, upgrades? Hearing none, sure. We will proceed to upgrades. Faction specific, any that grab you by the gizzard and make you want to say, this is going in my Molochs deck. We'll go with Phil first. What you got?
Ooh, there's a few that are worth mentioning, I think. It's not interesting, but Blooming Spores for just a +1 damage on range 1 or 2. I mean, it's just a great strength clone, but having two great strengths in your deck without burning the restricted slot for incredible strength is...
Poor incredible strength.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
Then Foul Temper, again, it's not super interesting, but it's a copy of Awakened Weapon.
Yep.
Which again, you're freeing up a restricted slot to take a card that does exactly the same thing.
Sure.
So I like those two a lot, but they're not very interesting. They just have already existed.
They're a real spite shroom of upgrades is what I'd say.
I think that there's two that I think have some sort of niche potential, but I'm not entirely sure if I would actually end up using them. But Horrific Stench for considering your opponent to have one fewer supporting fighters to a minimum of 0. So potentially Molog can then go and start smashing multiple people without them getting a defense boost, which would be nice for the Whirling Club. And then Rooted to the Spot, so that you can have your Stalagskrig hold objectives.
Right, that opens up other strategies or deck archetypes, right?
Yep.
Wait, but does it though? Like, just because your Squig can hold an objective, is that what, you make an objective deck then?
It means that he could sit back and read Tome of Glories or different things like that. So
okay,
there's a few options if you're going rogue. I think it's tough because those options only are unlocked if this upgrade shows up in your hand early enough to go. But yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, so Phil, I think Foul Temper is pretty solid there. Again, like you said, if you can get a restricted card without burning a restricted slot, that's pretty tasty. It increases accuracy. This warband lives or dies on Molog's accuracy. I think that's a great choice, especially as somebody who can often be making multiple attacks with one activation. So Whirling Club, if all of a sudden you're getting to reroll a die on 2 or 3 attacks in the one activation, you can make your money back on that big time. On a similar vein, if we're talking about generics, the deck we built, we were doubling down on that as well. So I had Awakened Weapon in there, and often ended up with Molog with a Foul Temper and Awakened Weapon. So he's throwing two dice looking for hammers, but rerolling both of those dice, which is pretty tasty when you're looking for
real good
liability. Yeah. Generics. Any generics jump out at you, Aaron?
Actually, honestly, nothing in particular really grabbed me. I mean, anything that you're going to do to increase his accuracy, the damage where you need it, if you have objectives that sort of rely on it, or a tough nut to crack when it comes to Stormcast or what have you, and maybe some survivability buffs, whether you can increase wounds or somehow increase the defense roll, just to keep the pain train rolling.
Yeah. What about you, Phil?
So there's two that I sort of would, I guess, pick to mention just because, I mean, there's a lot that we could talk about, but I think these were ones that sort of jumped out to me. So first, and I think lots of people have already noticed this one and I think, are complaining about it a lot online is Tome of Offerings.
Yeah, especially on this guy.
It's pretty brutal when Malog is getting 2 glory for every kill. It's just real rough if he starts with that early.
We had that upgrade on Hakka, of all people, tonight. I was on the receiving end of a Tome of Offerings Hakka, and it still felt pretty rough. So, like, Malog carrying it, yeah, get out of here.
Yeah. The other one is more of a dark horse, but I think there's something to it. The Cursed Pendant, I think, is what it's called. It's an old cursed artifact. It's an old one. And I don't think anyone ever used it because it was +1 defense, -1 wounds.
Yeah.
But Malog's got enough wounds that theoretically you could kind of make this work. You sort of have to balance who you're fighting. If you're fighting super accurate warbands, it probably won't matter. Going to 2 shields is great, but if you're reducing yourself to 6 wounds, it might mean getting punked that much faster than you normally would. Because if your opponent can only hit for 3, that sure. effectively is meaning you're dropping yourself to 2 hits instead of 3.
Yeah.
So it's situational, but I kind of like it because it's just a flat +1 defense, and there's not a lot of that hanging around.
Right. So I feel like that's a card that benefits either fighters who are so low on wounds that, and you know, like you can put it on putting on Lurking Skaven at one point. I think I had Acrobatic and that on him, so he's rolling 4 dodge. Mm-hmm. He was down on 1 health, so if they can find some way of damaging him without actually rolling dice, he was totally boned. But
yeah.
But yeah, so like, let's say you put it on Malog, you drop from. Say somebody's going at him with 2 hammers, pretty good attack. 2 hammer against his 1 shield, 54% chance of succeeding. With 1 extra shield, he drops it to a 39%. So he cuts a 15% chance off. That's pretty good over the course of a number of attacks. So I like that as a possibility. Here's one I thought was kind of a little bit of a rogue. This is exactly the kind of card I would include, and people would tell me I was wrong for including it, and they would almost certainly be correct. It's my sort of janky love affair. A Spiteful Charm, and this is where reaction after an enemy fighter's mm-hmm. attack action that damages this fighter, discard this card. Choose one of the enemy fighter's upgrades, that card is discarded. So somebody comes in with great strength or something, and you peel that off, like, all right, you're not hitting me again with that +1 strength. Or even better, if they've got some defensive thing that was keeping them alive. Obviously, they're going to see this coming, but if there's ever a fighter that's going to survive more than one hit, it's this guy. So that felt like a card that might get some mileage on him.
Yeah, that's an interesting deterrent one, because if somebody's, you know, got Deathly Fortitude or whatever,
yeah,
and that's the only reason they're still alive, they can't hit you now unless they kill you.
Plus, it doesn't have to be adjacent. So, you know, like, let's say somebody is like, well, Malog is out of move. I can stand back here and throw Shade Glass darts at him until he's dead. Like, well, no, you get 1 shot. If you damage me, I'm gonna peel your darts away somehow.
So, yeah.
So, and upgrades, if there's ever a place for jank, it's upgrades, because that's
it's a safe place to put them.
The most wiggle room. Yep.
I guess one other one that I think should be mentioned that I wasn't going to mention, but now I'm looking at it and I'm just going, really have to talk about it, is the Potion of Grace.
Yeah.
It's super good on Malog. It being able to peel a move token is decent on a lot of warbands. It's super, super good on Malog. If he's not inspired yet, and then you move him up into position, peel a move token, now he can move and then charge again, or charge and, like, I don't know. It's just, it opens up a lot of avenues for getting him across the board when he normally shouldn't be able to go that far.
Right, totally. In that same vein, I think movement upgrades, so sprinter or legendary
speed
or something, I think. Because most fighters, you're going to take advantage of that once a round, right? But this is one who can leverage that extra hex of speed twice around, and that's a big deal. More if you have Potion of Grace. I call it myself. All right, we've kind of touched on most of these. Anybody got any last thoughts on upgrades here before we move on? All right, hearing none, we'll go to... I'm going to jump to strengths and weaknesses, actually. So as we've talked about the cards and the individual fighters, what do we think overall is the strength of this warband for what makes them stand out? We'll go with Phil. What do you got?
I really think the double move, double charge thing is it's really just going to be what makes Malog go and is what's going to make this warband so hard to deal with. And it sort of shows, right, in online people talking about like, oh, you know, how am I choosing to deal with Malog? Well, they're bringing things like Cruel Taunt to uninspire him so he can't charge twice. And they're bringing things like, I mean, Transfixing Stare is super good no matter what, but it especially is helpful for slowing Malog down. And like Frozen in Time, I think, is another one. And a lot of those cards people weren't even bringing before because they were 50-50s. And now it's like, well, I gotta stop Malog because normally you only have to worry about a single charge or someone moves and then you can kind of reposition to get away from them. But sure, you can't do that with Malog. And right, right. I think that's what's given people the most fits. You know, 4 damage is good, but other fighters have 4 damage. Like, that's not unheard of.
Yeah.
7 wounds is obviously a big factor, but considering the rest of the warband doesn't really do anything, when you think about it in total warband wounds, I don't think 7 is like super unreasonable.
So, yeah. So I'm hearing, you know, for you, the strength multi-movement is the big deal. And kind of what you're talking about with these ploys that, or these cards that are seeing people are at least going back and taking a look at, is people are identifying this is a warband that falls apart if this one fighter is removed from the equation, whether it's by Frozen in Time, whether it's by charging in, killing him, ready for, or, you know, charging in and getting 2 attacks using a ready for action or something like that, which potentially very dangerous because Malog, if he's got, you know, my turn, is going to smash you, mm-hmm. smash you with his knockback 1 or even 2 when he's inspired out, you know, into next week. Or just straight up kill you, but right. So a strength, that multi movement. A weakness is if they can find a way to ice out or kill Malog, then there's not much left for the warband to do. Aaron, you got anything jumps out at you for strength and weakness?
Well, yeah, but to build off what Phil was saying, like what we got here is a warband that sort of fundamentally breaks the rules of the game, and I think whenever that. And like in a good way, I'm not saying that's a problem. But like when that happens, it takes a while for people to adjust their decks to have to deal with that, regardless of what the individual rule breaking is. In this case, it's the multi-move and this, mega monster leader. But it ends up inevitably warping the meta around it more than I think any of the other warbands that we've seen. I don't know if that's completely true, but it feels like it anyways right now. I think that's one of the strengths in that, how it sort of affects the game and how it makes it a better game is sort of a unique play style, just because of just variation to the rule that it can do something that other warbands can't. I think maybe not it's a strength on the table, but rather a strength of the release is that factor. And then the weakness obviously is all the eggs in one basket, as we've been repeatedly alluding to. But I think you got to have a con to this sort of play style, so which that makes sense. And I think it's also very thematic, so by no means do I begrudge the weakness at all.
Yeah, for me, the stealth strength of this warband is that range 2 on Malog's main club. Like that lets him get a lot of work done without ever moving, and it means that you can, it's much more forgiving on positioning. So you can move somewhere. You can move right next to somebody. Say your first action is a move. Even if they hit you and knock you back, you're still going to be able to drive you back, I should say. Knockback might still ruin your day. But it means that you can, you, I think you get a lot of play out of that. And with one position, you get a lot of people in danger. And I think he, almost as much with his multi-movement stuff, I think he also gets as much benefit out of that range 2 attack. And then to go with that, a weakness would be accuracy, right? Like two hammers is pretty good. I remember thinking it was awesome when I was playing Reavers and I've got Blooded Saic. It's like, oh yeah, my two hammer attack, that's one of my best ones. Felt like here at the end of the day, like you need to be thinking about it, because if you are all in on his attacks landing, two hammers on, you know, on a single die is somewhere in the 50% range, and you probably want better than a rough coin flip every time you take a swing. So I think he'll end up with some games where he misses more attacks than he connects with and just never gets the glory train going. So we kind of touched on it off and on, but let's talk overall strategies. Like if you are playing as Molochs, what strategies are available to you? And we'll go right back around to Phil here on this.
So I think, surprisingly, I think you have a lot of choices. At first glance, it kind of seems like, oh, we'd have to go all aggro maybe.
Yep.
But, so and while I do like that choice with him, I think one where you could catch people off guard is playing him defensively, and playing him defensively in a way where you're not just trying to be passive and hide, but you're using his bulk to have reactive damage, so that in trying to kill him, you'll, by the nature of the cards you're using, end up killing yourself, which means that you kind of have to ignore him, but you can't ignore him, right? Because otherwise he's going to come and smash your face.
Right. And you can salt in things like a destiny to meet, you know, give him things that, like, hey, you know, you're damned if you, sure, damned if you don't, right?
Right. One that I didn't mention when we were talking about upgrades, but I think would be interesting with that tactic, would be the Shield of Argentine or whatever it's called, where if someone hits you while they're adjacent to you, they just take one damage.
Yeah, Blessing of Argentine.
Yeah. And since he has so many wounds, it's almost guaranteed to happen a couple times in a game unless they're using all ranged attacks, which, sure. I mean, I don't know that that's going to happen very often unless you're playing Forest Riders.
God's Worn Hunt. Everything to Jigathra. Jigathra and Allo for life. I think you're right. I mean, there's obvious that we've referenced a bunch of times is the Molag goes and kills them all, and then Molag with some insurance. So if you're saying like, well, maybe they'll figure out a way to deal with Molag, so I need some ways to score even if Molag is off the table. Which, again, talking about my brother being here playing a bunch of games, we had some weird things pop up, like Molag died actually three games in a row in like the second action phase, and so I had one where like I had all these generic upgrades dumped on Bat Squig, and so Bat Squig was running around with vampiric weapon and an extra wound and just trying to keep himself alive long enough to get to the end.
He did, yeah.
I mean, I got crazy lucky. He was mostly trying to like run away from Sour Tongue and pick off any little archers that he could along the way. So that's a pretty fun game there when you're all in on like, hey, can Bat Squig survive? Because once he's inspired.
With acrobatic, he's yeah. not easy
if,
to
if
hit.
You put acrobatic in this, well, that's funny. I thought about acrobatic because with using change of tactics and keep them guessing, I was like, well, I'm actually putting Molag on guard quite a bit. So he's on guard. All of a sudden he can benefit from acrobatics. So maybe there's some, maybe that's just the kind of jank card that
no!
I want.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. All right. I think we've, unless somebody's got something even weirder for a strategy to throw out, I think we're on to matchups.
Is Molag killing everybody weird?
I mean, that's...
No, I'm kidding. Here, keep going.
So matchups. We've seen when we were playing, we played some Boggs versus Magors, played, I think, three rounds. He kind of cleaned up there. Played a bunch against Zarbag's Gits, played some against Ghosts. So in my take on watching those is that, watching or playing in those, is that when you're swinging with the accuracy that he is, whether you're swinging at some, like he gets his most mileage out of hitting somebody with a lot of wounds. So if he can smoke somebody out of a Stormcast Warband, so a three fighter Warband, or even Magor's four fighter Warband with one of his hits, like he's making a lot, he's taking a big chunk out of your effectiveness there, as opposed to the swarm ones, it's a little dicier, because if he pops one of your nine Gits, there's still eight more to still do things, right? So it feels like, to me, it feels like his preferred matchup is those smaller elite warbands that he can get at before they get really buffed up on defense.
I would make the counterpoint that warbands that are numerous but really fragile, like the skeletons.
Sure.
He loves chomping on those with the whirling club all day. Especially
and a tome of offerings or whatever. Yeah. That gets gross in a hurry. That's a good point.
So I think it depends. I think Zarbags and Ghosts, because of, you know, they don't have to play directly to him. They can kind of do their thing by and still avoid him, even though they've got a bajillion guys running around. I think they do a little bit better job of handling him, but somebody like Garrix Reavers, for instance, or the Sepulchral Guard, they're probably just going to get eaten up.
That's fair. I think Zarbags in particular, and to a lesser extent, the Thorns, what they have going for them is that once they're inspired, they're almost all rolling two defense dice, right? And that's that ends up being a big deal when he is already kind of reaching for accuracy at the level. So when you have a whole warband at two dodge, odds may still be in his favor to land that hit, but you, over the course of the game, you skew it just that little bit extra and slow his glory collection down enough. We found that he actually struggled a bit with Zarbags for specifically that reason, is that he'd fail to connect with a hit, and then even if he did, they could counterpunch with something or just run away, whatever the case may be. Aaron, any thoughts on matchups based on what you have seen or read?
I think you guys have covered it. I think given his versatility in his attacks, which is to say his big attack, his big single attack, or his AOE, you may have to like maybe tailor the sorts of upgrades or you know things that you're suiting him up with to sort of bolster one or the other, which then would be very matchup dependent. But I think with each of those options, you have tools in your arsenal to tackle, whether it's the small elite warbands or the swarming ones. So I think that versatility probably helps him out.
So let's wrap it up with let's say you have heard all about Malog, but you are not running him. What strategies are something that you should be angling for against him? Just hope the dice go well, or what? Phil, any thoughts?
I think as we had talked about with the weaknesses, trying to keep him isolated, trying to keep him from moving is a solid choice. I don't know that you necessarily want to stack too many cards for that, because it won't necessarily be as effective against other warbands, but like Transfixing Stare is so good right now that if you're not running it, it's probably a mistake. So just put it in there. It'll do good things for you against anyone, and it'll definitely help to slow him down.
Well, and the weird thing about that for him is like it helps against him, but if of anyone, it helps against him probably least, because he can still charge after he gets that, right? And you had to be within two hexes when you dropped it on him. I still think it's totally useful on him. And if you drop it on him after he's already got a move or a charge, then yes, now he's iced out for the rest of the round.
Right. And I think that's the idea, that you're, you know, he moves up into position, you transfixing stare him, and then he's stuck. Yeah. And then I guess the only other thing would be that, like, you need to be willing to go in on him and know that you're probably going to lose a fighter or two trying to take him out. I definitely felt that I made that mistake playing against him, thinking like, oh, I'll, you know, go after some squigs to try and get some glory early, and then I'll go and deal with Malog when I'm built up a bit. But the problem with doing that is that now you've got a full wounds Malog running around who's got upgrades. And now he can kill anybody in one hit, and he's way scarier once he's got upgrades.
Sure. Like, you're playing this game of, can I afford to totally ignore him and try and pick up glory from picking up his griblies around him, or do I go in and give him that big hit early on, which unfortunately inspires him, but also puts him within range of being killed by any other guys. If you can get in and get 3 or 4 damage on him, then one more charge maybe sees him off. There's still dice got to be rolled, but that all of a sudden in the head of the Malog player, they're saying, okay, like, can I afford to put him out in this risky place where multiple people can charge him? So it keeps him from operating with impunity. So, but I think the big thing is make him, just like any other aggro thing, make him charge. He can do more of it than others, but don't give him those free, I'm going to swing at you from range 2 before I have to start doing anything. Because if he can sit still and keep swinging before he's got to actually make his charges, then he's getting so many more attacks, and his attacks are such high value. So every attack you can deny him is good. All right. Anybody got any other thoughts on the matchups and strategies, et cetera, et cetera?
I just was thinking that something that I haven't seen talked about much is the Malog mirror match. How does that play out?
Yeah, geez, I haven't even thought about that.
My guess would be it kind of just comes down to dice, but I don't know. It'd be interesting if they're playing different strategies of Malog and then seeing who can come out on top with that. But I honestly, I've not even read a single thing about a Malog to Malog matchup. So if it's out there, I'd be interested to see, but I haven't heard about it.
That's interesting. I wonder if that knockback 2 on the inspired Malog ends up being a bigger deal, like really send it back, say, all right, you got to charge if you're going to,
I don't know. Yeah, that's, probably.
That's weird. That'd be bizarre to see.
I think I read in the rules that when you deploy, you keep all your squigs off the table and you just plop your 2 Malogs in the middle and then you just make them swing for the fences.
Just like a sumo match. Mm-hmm. Both players go off to the side and just run into each other until one of them falls down.
2 trolls enter, 1 leaves.
All right. Well, I think that's going to about do it for us tonight. We're looking at coming back in a couple weeks. Tentatively, our plan is to cover random ploys, that is ploys that only go off in the manner of Frozen in Time or some such, where you have to make a dice roll to see if it executes. Be talking a little bit about those. We are also working on getting some reps in with Godsworn, so we can talk a little bit about them. Spoiler alert, they're a lot harder to run than Malog. in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, again, we're at WTHcast and whatthehexcast@gmail.com. We are part of the bigger Mortal Realms network. You can get on with our stuff. What's the website for that, Aaron?
Why, it is www.themortalrealms.com.
Yep, hit that up for any of our content. We got blogs and podcasts and all that stuff on there. And we'd be very grateful if you would drop us a review on your pod listener of choice. You can rate us and review us. That's it helps us out in getting in touch with more listeners out there.
You guys can't see, but Davey's pointing down to the imaginary.
No, I would never do that. Below the screen. So I have the power to edit all of this out. So let's splice you together saying something goofy. All right. That's it. Thanks for What the Hexcast. I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
This is Aaron.
I more or less shamelessly stole Steve Vann's deck from his post today and then made some changes to make it worse. So, you know what this deck needs is Disturbing Presence. Usually these hangouts are log in, look at Aaron painting and not hearing you for a little while, and then he remembers to plug in his headphones. But
it's not that they're plugged in or not plugged in. It's that I haven't switched the defaults, Davey.
Oh, all right. My burn is inaccurate.
And an inaccurate burn is the worst kind of burn.